All right. Well, the gang's all here. We are a week out from Thanksgiving, and the huge topic that I know is on everyone's mind is are you guys okay with people getting all the Christmas decorations and Christmas music out this early?
You know, every family can make that decision, and my wife has started, and I can't really complain because she's the one that actually does the work for it. So, I'm only going to complain so much because I'm not really setting anything up. But yeah, I do think it's a little early for like our little town here already has the downtown has its lights up, and it's cute, but you know, we're more than a month out, you know. Personally, I'd
Yeah.
like to get past Thanksgiving. That's my barometer, but I also know people need things to do, so.
So,
Adam.
this I've been away from the show for a few episodes, and I feel like I was brought back specifically because you needed somebody to go off on the lack of respect for Thanksgiving. So, I hate it with everything in me. If you need to put up a lot of decorations, fine, you can start early as long as they're not ones that make it obvious what you're doing. Like, do the wrap around the house, don't turn them on, but you can go ahead and start setting them up. Wrap your trees, don't turn them on, but don't be putting out the blow up stuff in the front yard. Don't be putting the reindeer in the front yard. It's November. We got all of the Christmas holidays, and there's a dad joke that's been going around the internet that said, it's basically says, I keep a pebble in my pocket. Anytime I hear someone playing Christmas music before Thanksgiving, I throw it at them. I call it my Jingle Bell Rock. That is me. I cannot stand. Don't play the music beforehand, any of that. Because what ends up happening is by the time Christmas actually gets here, I'm over it. I'm just done. I'm like, I'm ready for it to be over. I'm walking through Walmart 2 days before Halloween and they were playing Christmas music. Like, it's just, to me, it's overblown. It's too much. And, you're taking away from the actual holiday. And that being said, retailers realized it too. You started seeing retailers that were opening up and putting these like early Black Friday deals and putting like opening up on Thanksgiving. They realized they actually were killing their own sales. And those were starting to be pulled back last year. And obviously with COVID, it's pulled back even more. But from what I've heard from friends that are in retail, even that's starting to pull back a little bit because they're realizing like, people are only going to spend so much money, so why are you creating, expanding the period where they're going to spend money to a larger dip period? Because all you're doing is eating into a different time frame that they may spend money differently. So, all right, soapbox done.
So, in general, I agree with you. Make the joke that everyone wants to make about the three fat guys mad that we're all bypassing Thanksgiving. I don't want to be.
Does that make us the wise men?
I think so. You know,
I
I
think it
don't want to
does.
be all I don't want to be all comrade Thanksgiving, but the crass consumerism that has become Christmas has really turned me off. And I'm kind of like you, Adam. By the time we get anywhere near Christmas, I am over the let's play, you know, Michael Jackson's harmonized list of things that happen at Christmas and all of those other things. And it just gets to be a bit much. I am willing to make an exception this year because 2020 has, been the year from hell. So I'm not really barking as loud as normal, but I think the three of us are all in agreement on this one. Let's enjoy the turkey, and then we can move on to Christmas.
Soccer chat with two T's because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga, so it's like a play on words. And you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
All right. Welcome to episode 25 of season 2 of Soccer Chat. We've got Alex, we've got Jeff, and we've got Adam.
Hey, Jeff.
Adam decided to take a little bit of time away from the show to be around his family, and then his family realized that meant that he had to be around, and now he's back.
Hey.
That seems that seems about right.
Legit. Either that, Alex, or we've been just so much needing adult supervision, he figured he has to man up and step up and kind of rein us in a little bit.
Let's be honest, they don't bring me in for adult supervision, right? That's not how that works.
Yeah, you joining the show was really the adult supervision, Jeff.
Yeah. Great. Oh, we're doomed.
So let's start with a tiny bit of Red Wolves news as we're recording today on Wednesday. The team has finally started to put out a few of their returning player announcements, and they started with Mr. SportsCenter, Jason Ramos, scorer of the Ramos Rocket that made it on SportsCenter's top 10. Exciting news to hear that, and I'm sure there's a few more that are going to be coming over the weeks. What do you guys think about Jason Ramos returning?
I think it's really good news, and we're going to need to have a fairly steady stream of signing news, you know, to keep people connected. I think he did a fantastic job. I was expecting him to sign, so that's good. But of course, every time they mention someone assigning, then we want more. And I think what comes to mind for me is, are we going to get Leo? Because they really did pair up really well, but we'll have to wait and find out if we're going to keep both of our back guys.
So from my standpoint, yeah, I'm super excited Ramos is back, but I'm one of those that doesn't think the dragging it on is a good play. Like, I think we've got a lot of players that we know aren't coming back already, right? Like Stephen Beattie's not going to be back. Obviously, Eamon Zai is not going to be back. Like, there's a lot we already know aren't. And I don't think there's a lot of value in dragging on, especially in today's world where you're dealing with, you know, here in the States, at least, you're dealing with all of the, you know, presidential stuff and you've got Christmas coming and you've got, you know, I just don't know that there's a lot of value in it. I don't think it's going to have the return they're expecting. So I'd rather them just come out and say, here's the players we're bringing back and we're excited about them as a group. Because I think, I just know for me, like, you give me one player a week, eventually I'm just going to be like, come on, guys, just tell me everybody and let's move on. And then we can start getting excited about new players. But I'm also a curmudgeon, so.
That is true. You are the curmudgeon. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to go on a weekly schedule or if maybe they're going to have, you know, one each day coming through here until they've announced all of their returning players. You know, I think we all have a pretty decent idea from conversations that we've had on the program with Sean and with Coach Jimmy and conversations we've had off air with them and people in the front office. About which of the first year players are coming back, and I assume that those are going to be the first ones they announce. I was talking with them. One of the things they were telling me in the front office is that when they get these contracts signed, and they have to send them through the league and get all the approvals that are required before they can announce them, it's kind of an arduous process. So what I have heard is that there is a small number of second year players that are going to be returning. The team has neither confirmed nor denied to me that those players are actually going to be returning. So they're probably there again, because if it is a third year, it's a new contract and it's got to make its way through the league. I've also been told that there are already two new players that they have signed and is making its approval through the league office. So all of that is ahead of what kind of things are going to come out of the combines that they're doing. The one that was just passed here in Chattanooga and one that's going to be happening in California. So I think there's a lot of news that they don't necessarily have to do week by week and drag it out like you're talking about, Adam. But it is fun to have new content every day when you open up Twitter and Facebook and see that, okay, today was Jason Ramos. Tomorrow you open it up and maybe they'll talk about Markey and going on like that. I don't know. So that'll be exciting to see.
Yeah, I think once we get the second one, we may get a sense of the pace. But I do wonder if it is also, you know, getting things agreed and where they can announce. He may be the first one that they can announce. I don't know. I am interested. We don't get as much detail on League One as you do on other leagues, so we don't get information as far as for if they're signed, for how long. I think the expectation is that everyone is signed for a 1 year, but I'm expecting that that over time is going to change. And because I am seeing other sides mentioned in League One that are talking about players signed for multi-year. So it would be nice to see if we had someone that was in multi-year as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are you know, the 1 year with the second year option. And I would say a lot of the younger guys that they signed this last season, someone like Jason Ramos out of the combine, that's the thing. And so, of course, they exercised his option. So it's not as if that has to go through, I think, as much of a league approval as a brand new contract for someone like Leo Fala, who's now coming back, would be coming back for his third year if that was the case. So we'll wait and see about those. But some of the other League One news that I thought would be fun to discuss, we have the all league teams, which were announced. Forward Greg Hurst, of course, made the all league first team, and Ricky Ruiz made the all league second team. As you look over those announcements for League One of who the all league teams were, people like goalkeeper Dallas J with Greenville, Evan Conway for Union Omaha in the midfield. You see people like Alex Morrell with Greenville Triumph. Do you guys see anywhere where you think a Red Wolf player might have been snubbed? Who do you think of the Red Wolves you would look to put in those all-league teams?
Well, looking at it, I think the first thing you were expecting could have been Mangles. Having said that, he's still, I think, one of the top keepers in the league, but I don't think there is much distance between him and Nuhu but definitely, I got to say, Dallas J is the top keeper. He needs to be on the first team. I could see where Alex Mingles could have been on the second team this year, but I'm not upset with Nuhu because he really had a great season. The other thing is, there's a few others I think maybe could have, but I think it boils down to the injuries that limited the playing time. And, you know, Hurst had quite a bit of injuries himself, and maybe he was close to not even making the list if he had played even less. So, I mean, if we had a full season for some of these guys, I know Markey got hurt. If he hadn't gotten hurt, I think Markey would have been on the list.
Yeah, I'd say that's true.
Yeah, the interesting thing is here, if you're going to put someone on, you have to take someone off, right? And so for like Markey Hernandez, I don't know, because he plays the forward position. I'm looking at the second team is really where he's going to come in. And when I look at who's on that second team, I don't know that there's someone he would have taken out there. The place I look at where I think there is an incorrect choice in that second team where I think we could have seen someone, I think Jonathan Ricketts didn't get the support he should have for the quality he put in the back line. And I think Connor Tobin is incredibly overrated. He's slow. He doesn't do a lot during the games. I know he's the captain for him, but that feels like a pick because of personality, not because of what he's created. So I think there's an opening on the back line for a possibility there. But from that, like, honestly, getting two players is a little bit surprising. I didn't think Greg Hurst deserved first team. I think a lot of his goals were from the, from the penalty spot, and I just don't know that he really deserved first. I actually probably would have put, and I hate to say this, is I would have put a Vancouver Decker on the first team before Hurst. So, yeah, I don't have any problems with it. I think that from the Red Bulls' perspective, the two they selected were the most likely. I just thought they were both second team.
So, I mean, I've got quibbles. This isn't something that I think has me overly animated. The one that I would say is I would say maybe drop one of the defenders on the second team for Jason Ramos. I think the quality and steadiness that he was able to bring through the season could possibly have earned him all-league mention. So hopefully that motivates him and puts him through. I'll tell you that not even Red Wolves related, but the one that I am the most surprised at is having someone like Alex Morrell, Greenville Triumph forward, best player on a team that wire to wire was in first place and won the championship, gets passed over for the MVP for Emiliano Terzaghi with Richmond Kickers, a player who scored one goal in the last six games of the season, in which his team lost four of those six matches to drop out of the top two of the standings. That seems a little suspect, giving him that. And it's almost, it felt like they were giving him the MVP because they had given goalie of the year, defender of the year, and coach of the year to Greenville Triumph players.
Yeah, I do think Alex Morrell was the MVP this year. I mean, nothing against Terzaghi, but it was Morrell's year.
I'm going to take something against Terzaghi. I think he played he was a one-dimensional player. I think he was an offensive player that, yeah, he had, you know, if you look at the duels, which is a debatable stat to begin with, he won 55% of them during the regular season, but dude took 39 shots and scored 10 goals, and nobody was talking about how he was great at being a part of the defense. And honestly, what hurt the Richmond Kickers down the stretch wasn't their offense. It was the lack of desire on the defensive end on some of those games. And that's where I think should have kept him from getting the MVP. While Morrell, you know, he was more than just a scorer. He tied for the most assists in the league. He created the third most chances in the league. Like you look at the stats for him, you know, there's a reason why, you know, the ball went through him for almost everything from that forward position. That's impressive, right? It reminded me a lot of what Beattie looked like last year, just to be honest with you. And so I personally felt like that's a good call out, that the mistake was on the MVP choice. And, you know, there's a reason Greenville basically smoked everybody this year, right? You know, you look at that first team, they have someone on the front line, someone in the middle, two in the back, and the goalie. Like, what the heck? That's a stacked team, right? So congrats to them. Yeah. They were the team. And I think that fear of giving it to Morrell, I think you're exactly right, Alex. Like, it really came down to, can we really give all the awards to them? And someone needs to tell League One, yeah, you can do that when the team is that dominant.
When they have a season as dominant as they had, yes, you can give them all those awards.
Yeah. You know, the thing I had the biggest beef with, and of course, I know this is fans' choice, was for goal of the year. There's this competition. It's like it's like the Sweet 16. It's like March Madness. It's got these brackets and so forth. We did have Hurst, one of his goals mentioned on there. He didn't advance, but we have a player on our team who made the top 10 for SportsCenter, and he wasn't even an option on here. Out of the top 16, not the top two or top four goals of the year, but of the top 16, they couldn't put the Ramos goal in there. And that, to me, is such a head-scratcher. Did they do that because we already had Hurst in there, or did they try to get someone from every team? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do think they tried to get someone from every team, looking at the bracket. I'm trying to see if anybody was left out. Like, New England's on here. So is a goal from, you know, Lopez Espin for Fort Lauderdale. So I think every team got at least one person on here. The thing is with those fan goal things, we all know who's going to be in the final, right? They put forward on one bracket, they put union on the other. Those are the two most active in social media. That's who will end up in the final. And it won't matter, because popularity contest shouldn't be how you choose goal of the year.
Right, but the league had to have chosen the first 16 to start the brackets. Yeah, I totally understand, and I agree. It's going to be, because it's a popularity contest, it's going to be forward against Omaha, because they really have a really strong fan base, and they're doing great. But the league decided which 16 are going to be your options, and that's the part I just don't get.
Yeah, you know, if certain other teams from the Midwest had managed to get one of their plays put on SportsCenter, then you know that there would be wall-to-wall coverage from League One about that fact. And, you know, they would probably sell some kind of root vegetable commemorating it and just get all sorts of love on social media. But I can be bitter about that for days and days.
I will say, and so the one thing that I have seen starting to turn is their shtick is kind of getting old and people are kind of done with it. Like they didn't really do a very good job of moving past the Mingo line, right? Full Mingo line, basically. And so I do think that that's becoming less, but I think Jeff nailed it. They do have incredibly, they've done a good job of curating a large following. And it's kind of like Chattanooga, where when Chattanooga itself was in a best outdoor city contest, and it was, if you look at the cities that were involved, it was all like young cities that would traditionally be involved in social media, right? You had like an Asheville, you had a Chattanooga, you had like Austin, you had, you know, these are the cities that like 20-year-olds are active on social media about their city. Popularity contest, internet popularity contest will always go down to who's the most active, not necessarily who was the best. And I wish they would have had the guts to just say, here was the real goal of the year and we selected it. Boom. But that's just, and you know, maybe I'm just once again being the old curmudgeon and not realizing like the whole point is to have interaction. But yeah.
At least they added fans' choice on there. But the thing I want to add in, when you made the comment of the Mingo line, to me, my brain was taken to something maybe from World War I, that it was a battle tactic planned by the Prussians like 100 years earlier, that the fabled Mingo line, and I can't get that out of my head now. So thanks. Thank you for that, Adam.
As long as the Mingo line can hold.
Yes, if we can hold the Mingo line, we're gonna be able to win this.
Right. All
and
right.
You are derailed.
Any other USL news that you guys have seen that you think we ought to mention, talk about before we head to other topics?
So, yeah, I think there is one thing I would like to talk about a little bit is that 3-year contract for the goalkeeper for Tormenta. Yeah. I think that was released today as well. That's the first time I've heard of a 3-year contract in League One. What are your initial thoughts of a player signing a 3-year contract at, you know, 20, I think he's 26 years old. What are your thoughts? Do you think this is a good move toward Tormenta? Because does it set them up to maybe sell him down the road? Or do you think it's a good move because they're locking him down? And what do you think of it from the player standpoint?
I like this because eventually, as other third division sides do in other countries, part of how they build their side is by buying and selling player contracts. And so it's really, you know, you don't see this 1-year stuff happen over in England or in Portugal or other places. And so that development, therefore, like, yes, it's great that we've had some players come through the Red Wolves and have been able to move on to bigger things. But it's even better if we could cash in on that as well. That way, that helps us then have the resources to go ahead and get new players and continue that development. I like the idea and I want to see more of it.
I guess we'll have to wait and see if it actually leads to a sale. Last year, there was one player that was sold. The amount of money was not really that much. I don't think it would amount to more than maybe one or possibly two new player contracts based on the proceeds from selling that player. It was I can't even remember the name now, but it was a player, I think, from the Richmond Kickers. Got sold to a club in USL Championship. MLS doesn't really seem all that interested in buying talent from the lower divisions in America. So to me, it feels like as a player, you know, I'm not going to try to criticize Pablo Jara. He knows what's best for himself when he signs the deal. But it just seems like as a young player, you're not wanting to get yourself locked in in the third division for a long period of time. You're playing in USL League One because you have aspirations to move to championship or in MLS and maybe even beyond that. So to me, it was kind of a head scratcher and says that, you know, he's a good goalkeeper. I would agree. You know, he had a fantastic save, the game saving save against Stephen Beattie in the match here in Chattanooga. But then he also has a couple head scratching moves, like the you talked about the Ricky Lopez Espin goal of the year nominee. I'm assuming was that one that he shot from the half line when Pablo Jara was indescribably far out from his goal, or coming out against Stephen Beattie in the first season. So, you know, if he plays out those years, that's 5 years playing with Tormenta, which, you know, that's five more years than I spent in professional soccer. But it really seems like you're kind of pegging yourself as I'm a Division III goalkeeper. It's good, but maybe not as great as you might aspire to. So I guess it really is just going to have to wait and see how it bears out if, you know, sometime in the next year or so, a club says, you know, we like that there's going to be a couple years of control over his contract, and they're willing to spend a little money in order to move him to their club.
All right. I mean, thanks for the input, guys. I found it very odd. I kind of fell in line with Alex that, you know, if you run it all the way out, you're spending 5 years in League One, you're 26 year old, you'll be 29 years old, and you're really for a keeper that can still actually be kind of young, but you know, your keepers don't really start disappearing from their top level that they hit until like 33, 34. So he'd still have probably 3 or 4 years in him, but that's still far into your career. And it could be that, you know, he's very happy in Statesboro. Yeah. So, more power to him. I'm happy for him because it puts stability for him, which in all honesty, you just don't get like Jeff was saying, you just don't get at this level typically in the US. So, you know, great for him. I'm happy for him. He doesn't have to worry about, you know, will I get to continue to be a pro athlete? He's locked in for the next 3 years. So congrats.
All right. Well, let's transition. We've got the second part of our end of season wrap up with Coach Jimmy Oblata. I hope you guys enjoy talking about things that happened in the combine, what he's looking for with the 2021 Red Wolves and what he's hoping to build. And a little bit about Thanksgiving. So enjoy. So we are here for part two with Coach Jimmy Oblata. Thank you so much for joining us, Coach. We know this is a busy time of year for you.
No, my pleasure. Always, like I said, I always have time for this great crew right here.
So we've got some questions, of course, kind of about your shopping list for the upcoming season and what you're wanting the team to look like. But over the weekend, you just completed a invitation-only combine in Chattanooga. You're going to be having another one here in a couple weeks. So I'm just interested, as you're making your plans for these combines and what the players are going to do, you know, what kind of drills and things they're going to do while they're there, what is it that you're trying to have the players show you based on the drills and the mini games and things that you set up in these combines? What's that you're looking for?
You know, we a couple things. We play small sided games the first session and work on some passing activities just to see how technically clean they are. I mean, you'd be surprised at some young men that struggle with that. When we put them in small side, we want to see how well they can play in a tight space, because the reality is sometimes when you put them in a full 11v11 game, there's just way too much space for you to really see what a player can do in a tight area. So we put them in small side games, 4v4, or a 6v6 game to goal and kind of see what they can do in that. And from there, we make our conclusions and evaluate them in there.
So then based off of, you know, if I was a person who wanted to make the team, what kind of things would you want me to show you during these combine sessions that would make you say, this is a guy that we really want to take a look at and offer a contract to?
So are you saying in the small-sided or just in general?
Just in general through the combine.
Wow, that's good. That's a good one because, you know, we tell the kids and the young men that come and try out, you know, it's like, I mean, it goes so much more than just soccer. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, they can all play and stuff, but for me and in watching and identifying players, obviously, you know, how technical and how good they are with the ball at their feet and can they make the right decisions that are needed in certain moments. But, you know, to me, it seems like just the intangibles that sometimes you just can't teach a player. Like if he loses a ball, does he put his head down and kind of sulk a bit, or does he immediately chase a player down? You know, how important is it to him? Like, is he kind of playing like a little kid, or is he playing like a man going through tackles and really trying to showcase himself? So, you know, for us and when we look at players, is, you know, what do they bring to the table that makes them stand out, that for us is so important? Again, their mentality, their attitude. Again, this being soccer all equal, you know, I mean, you could be a great soccer player, but if you're not willing to do the extra stuff, you're probably not going to make it one of our teams. You know what I mean? So I think for us is just seeing their body language, seeing how important it is to them, seeing how, you know, when they get subbed out or something, how they react, you know, or when they get subbed in or you know, moments in the game, if a free kick comes, are they stepping up and saying, I'm taking it because I want to show how well I do. So I think a lot of it has to do with just their mentality and their attitude and those parts that, again, you can't teach. You can work on improving, but their basic DNA is set a certain way that helps them stand out.
Now, I know you already have a sense in your head of who's coming back from last year, and you also know the roles or the spots that aren't there. So as you're watching these guys in the combine, how much time is in your head of thinking how they would connect with the existing players, or are you just looking at them completely as a clean slate?
Are you asking of the players that are coming in, the ones we're looking at as a clean slate?
Yeah, in other words, so there are certain players that you know, you already know you've invited to come back. And so when you're watching the new guys in the combine, how much, I'm just kind of curious, how much is that in your head of thinking this could fit with my existing pieces, or are you just completely open in your head of thinking, let's just see what I have?
No, I mean, you go in there with an idea. Look, I'm looking for a six. I'm looking for, you know, I'll draw like a five. And you go with those ideas saying, you know, will I find one of those players here, right? But then you have one that catches your eye and you say, okay, can that player, again, our in our head and in my head as we evaluate players is, can that player help me help the team win games and win a championship? So if I look at a player, I go, is he better than what I have, or can he be better than what I have? So again, we had some players that we didn't know were going to do well this weekend, or I don't want to say it like that. We had some players that showed up that were like, wow, he's an interesting player. We had one that I had high hopes for, and he didn't disappoint. You know, a young man, and so you kind of, again, you come with these ideas of. If he comes in, can he take a starting spot right away, or how long would it take? I mean, again, we are not looking at players that, I want to say it the right way, are projects where, you know, 2 years down the line, not now. I mean, we're in a position where we have to look at players that can, you know, through our preseason and through, you know, halfway through the season can be fighting for a starting position if they haven't already in the first, you know, in the preseason. So we want guys that are going to fight for, you know, challenge the guys we currently have and make us better in you know, through and through. So I don't necessarily just say, oh, I mean, I go with ideas of who I want, but ultimately, you know, some players shine a little bit better that we decide to offer them spots.
So, and I know that you've got another combine that's coming up. So have you seen players that you're going to make offers to? Are there, you know, guys that you kind of have on a list, but you're going to wait to see what happens in the following combine?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we had a few kids here that, you know, there's a couple in, I mean, two stages. Like, one, do we like them that we'd offer them a contract now? You know, guys that we offer a contract, you know, for now, you know, that we want them now. And then ones that we might invite into training season when we start, you know, when the preseason comes, and see them in our environment, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean, again, you know, in this last one, there was a player, like I said, that we had high hopes for, and he didn't disappoint. I think he'd be one that we might be offering him a contract. And there's a few that we like to invite when we open up our preseason, to kind of start and see them in our environment, how well they do there.
Okay. Very good. So, your next combine is in California. Is there going to be any other combines here in Chattanooga?
No.
Okay.
We held the one here, and we're holding another one in Cali, and that'll be pretty much, you know, for us for this year. I mean, it doesn't say we might not hold one later, but I just don't see us doing it right now.
Okay.
Do you have the guest room ready? And should I just tell you now how I like to have my eggs in the morning, or should I just wait till after the interview for that?
You know, it's we actually wash the sheets. Wow. We have like extra pillows, and you know, and they're all fluffed up and they're ready for you, man. You just can't disappoint. Because if not, you'll be sleeping with the dogs, you know.
Well,
that's great.
I know Alex used to be a keeper, and I know Coach likes them clean sheets. So
yes.
There you go. So looking forward to next year with some of the guys that you're bringing into these combines to look at. You know, we know there hasn't been any announcements, but we know that there's a couple players that have been signed to the team. What sort of things are you looking for as you're building the team for next year? Where are you looking to get better as the Chattanooga Red Wolves?
You know, I think there's a couple ideas in what we're looking at. I mean, you know, one is just being a little more dynamic team coming forward. I think one of our biggest issues last year was, once we lost Ami, I think we've discussed this, you know, then we put Wally. We didn't really have, and after we lost Wally, we didn't have another player that could break lines individually through the midfield, that if he had to, you know, dribble out of traffic or dribble through traffic, he could get out. So for us, it's finding those players that are comfortable with the ball enough that if we can't play through them, that they can, you know, break down an organized team individually, similar to what Marky does and to kind of what Ricky does and those types of players through the midfield. So, you know, we're looking at finding those players that can turn in the midfield and be a little bit more, I don't want to say attack minded, but be able to play more in the opposing teams attacking or opposing teams half. So keeping the ball deeper, farther away from our goal, but playing more in their area. And then again, you know, we had Greg Hurst last year that scored 7 goals, but other than that, we didn't have a consistent goal scorer. I think looking for a true 9, someone that can be there, because the reality is we create so many chances, and we just didn't have a person aside from Greg that could put those opportunities away. So I think, you know, aside from that, we want to keep everything kind of the same and build on it, but I think we want to find in those areas of the field that can help us, we feel are going to help us be more successful next year.
So I can imagine you're looking beyond just the combines, but also looking at existing clubs, players who might be available. Are you looking at USL mostly? Or are you looking at other leagues? Are you looking at other countries outside?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, you could see in the combine, we're turning every rock and trying to find a player wherever we can. You know, I mean, yes, we need to bring in some experienced players, and you need to have those, but if we can find them, phenomenal. But we're looking everywhere. I mean, yeah, we've We've had some interest, or we've reached out to some championship team players, you know, USL League One, players overseas. They just have to be, and I keep insisting on this, they have to be our type of player, a player that can come in and understand what our culture is about, what we're about, and fit in, you know, because that's very important into, you know, our success for the future. So, you know, we're looking everywhere. Really, we're looking for everywhere and really trying to find, you know, really be picky in who we're bringing in. And considering we're not sure when the league may start, we might have a little bit more time, you know?
Okay.
As that sits right now, what kind of plans do you guys have a date for when you're going to be opening preseason camp, or is that still waiting to see when the start of the season will be?
Well, we don't know, really. We don't know. I mean, it all depends on when the season, when opening day is. So whenever our first day is, we'll probably work back or work forward there two and a half months. So whenever, you know, if it starts May 1st, we'll probably start in the middle of February or something, you know?
Middle of February is a great time of year, I've heard.
Yeah, well, that's near Valentine's Day. That's what that's about.
Yes.
We could do a special preseason Valentine's get together, and maybe like how we had the day where we wore pink, we could do that again. But do that for a preseason friendly. So I know that, yeah, a lot of those questions as far as for when the season starts, that's out of your hands. But is there going to be, do you have in your head right now of any changes in formation and big picture changes, or is it going to be more tweaks coming into next year?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, it really depends on the players that, I mean, can we bring in the players that are going to allow us to maintain, you know, a consistency in how we play from last year? Are they going to be able to display and play the way we want them to play? You know, it's really just, we want it. I think, again, I said from last year when we first started, we're really not going to change. Or I said in the beginning, you know, there's a certain way we're going to play. We're going to be very attack-minded. We're going to create chances. We're going to press. So none of that is going to change. That's going to continue to be the same. So as far as tweaking it, yeah, we might be looking at different ways and different formations of when we go and visit play away, you know, tweaking things, because this was a great learning experience here for all of us. But I think in the big scheme of things, we're going to stay true to what we said and bring in pieces that are going to help us just even do a better job of showing that on the field.
So I'd like to share my condolences on the World Cup qualifier with Uruguay hosting Brazil, unfortunately not winning. We also had a big weekend for the U.S. men's national team. Seemed like a roster of young, mostly European-based players. Was there anyone that stuck out to you with the U.S. national team in those games this weekend?
You know, again, not stick out, but I mean, just continues to do well is Giovanni Reyna. The kid's quality, you know, 17 years old, already playing in Borussia Dortmund. I don't think people really understand. I don't think anyone understands how, what an accomplishment that is and how special that is for a young man to do that. And to be able to play at that level and start and play in the Champions League and really do what he's doing. I mean, it's not for anyone and everyone, you know what I mean? So he's one that I've been really impressed with and just, you know, how mature and how well he shows himself. I have some high hopes for him in the future. And the next one is, Soto, who came in yesterday and scored two goals for the U.S. That young man is, mark my words, he's going to probably be the next Brian McBride type forward that we haven't had in this country for a long time. I mean, again, that's a whole different discussion. You know, we've squeezed out the attacker out of forwards in this country, unfortunately, just like we've squeezed out the defending out of backs in this country, but that's another discussion for us to have. But Soto has he has those traits that, you know, again, we've squeezed out of kids in this country, and he's lucky that you know, he's had a great that the Soto family is a big soccer family, and they've pushed him. You know, he's gone on to now in England, and I think he's in loan in Holland, if I'm not mistaken. But that mark my words, that young man is gonna, he's gonna be something very special for our national team. So I hope we can keep him, because I know Chile's been trying to get him to go with them. But those are the two that I would say I'm probably most impressed with.
So League One is filling in a role that's been much needed by covering that third division down. As that continues to grow, and of course, I know there's another third division team. As that grows, do you think that's going to improve our prospects for the U.S. men's national team as far as for developing homegrown players?
Well, I think, I mean, of course, I mean, look at the our league in the U.S., I mean, League One, USL League One. I mean, in 2 years, what it has become, even with COVID this year. I mean, it was a professionally run league. The quality is getting better. I mean, if you look at the league again from our first year, it's getting younger, right? The league is becoming, you know, 21, 22, you know, 25 is about the average age. You know, if you get too much older than that, you're in the dinosaur stages. You know what I mean? But I think as the USL League One improves, you're just going to see more players that again. They're not, I mean, this is a different discussion again, but you know, the MLS is not, unless you're a homegrown player, you know, it's very difficult for homegrown players to sign on a first team, you know, in Atlanta and, you know, LAFC. So kids can become professionals, true professionals, playing on a Chattanooga Red Wolves, be in a professional environment, understand what it is to be a professional, grow professional, have 2, 3, maybe 4 years by the time they're 21 or 25. I mean, they're still young that they can then be sold anywhere, go in the MLS, go play championship. So I think the league's only going to continue to get better, and it's only going to continue to bring in better, younger players so that those players can, again, mature and grow and become young professionals in the proper environment. And as opposed to going MLS and then working their way down, it's they're coming into lower levels and moving their way up. And I think that's one part that, you know, we in this country, we kind of lose sight of. I mean, look at Vardy, look at even Cristiano Ronaldo. Cristiano Ronaldo didn't wake up one morning and sign with Real Madrid, right? He played in Sporting Lisbon. Then he went to Man U, then he went to Real Madrid, and you know, I mean, I think sometimes we lose sight of that in this country, thinking, oh, I gotta sign MLS or I gotta go championship. And it's like, look at the best players in the world don't just jump, you know, into the first team, and you know, they have to go through the stages of development as a professional and understand what it is to be on the bench, understand what it is to, you know, have a coach, you know, in your face and telling you it's not good enough, and be in a stadium where people are yelling at you and stuff. So I think as our league grows, you're going to start seeing that a lot more, and it's only going to improve the quality of soccer as a whole in the United States.
Well, that sounds like a great recruiting pitch to all the people in the MLS academies in our vicinity there. Come to Chattanooga and be a young professional.
You know, again, I mean, I'm not here to cut anybody's legs off and stuff like that, but the reality is, I mean, you look at the stats, look at the numbers. I mean, how many kids, you know, go into an academy system, whatever academy, MLS academy system, and actually go all the way through and sign a homegrown contract? I mean, you know, kids that play in our academy, and I've said this from day one, I mean, we're already looking at players, right? There's at least three that come off the top of my head, that young men that we want to invite into our training environment once the preseason starts, you know, and they will those young men would have a greater chance of staying with the Chattanooga Red Wolves, playing, developing in the academy, getting pulled into training sessions with the first team, eventually getting training with the first team consistently. And then they, they debut at 17, 18, 19 years old, and you know, and they'll get the, they'll actually play professional games. And if they do well, by the time they're 21, 22, here's coming, I don't know, the Galaxy or LAFC, and they want those players because they've already played professionally and they're American kids. So, you know, again, it seems too easy for people to, you know, if it's too easy, people like can't be right. It's like, no, I need to drive 3 hours to Nashville or to, an hour and a half to, you know, what's this club, Atlanta United, to play, to make it professional. It's like, no, just common sense tells you, you're in a good place. So, so that's the pitch.
No, that's good. And that definitely sounds like a topic we'll have to revisit in the winter. Cause I've got like five or six other questions, but I don't want to keep you too long. I wanted to go back to thinking about the combine and yourself when you were a teenager headed down to Uruguay to do tryouts and stuff. What were the things going through your mind when you were making that leap of faith, trying to get a professional contract and you're going in to have trials with these teams?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I never really thought about it. Like, I just, it was something that I kind of prepared my whole life for, you know, and kind of, I knew, you know, I think I told you the story of my first time when I went and they had me try out and stuff. It was a game. It wasn't even a tryout. I played for the reserve team or the youngers, the U19, which was a lot of the reserve players. And we played against second division, the first team of the second division. And they put me out there and it was, hey, show us what you can do. And that's what it was. And I knew the only way I was going to show them that I was better than of the guys that I had there was demanding the ball, getting after it, showing myself. And it's the same thing I tell young men when they come and try out for us or, you know, what's going to separate you from the other guys? I mean, what are you going to do that's going to make you stand out? And so that was always my mentality. You know, I was in the 96 combine, the first combine for the MLS held in UCI in Cali. And, you know, there was like 220 players from every walks of life, NASL, NPSL, Europe. And it was always, I mean, I'm a forward. I got to score goals. What am I going to do? I have to score goals for people to see me. So, I mean, again, my mentality was always that I have to show that I'm better than what's there, because this is the reality. Nobody's going to sign you if you're not better than what they have. I mean, if you're better than what they have, then people are going to take notice. But if you're not, they're just going to overlook you and look to the next guy. So that's always been very, you know, in my head every time I've gone and tried out or done a trial. And that's what I try to convey with the young men that, you know, that come and try out for us.
Do you have any other questions, Jeff?
No, not too much. I unfortunately wasn't at the combine, so all my questions keep popping up are stuff for the future. So it's really not on this topic.
So I guess the last question here, of course, with the holidays and as you know, looking at all of us on Soccer Chat, we enjoy the food. what's the go-to side dish for Obleda family Thanksgiving?
Ooh, go-to side dish. Man, that's a good one. You know, I got to say, my mother-in-law's stuffing.
Mm.
Amazing, huh. Like amazing, you know, it's so good. Like you know what? And I don't know if this is a dish, but her gravy also. So
again, I'll definitely count that.
But yeah, it's a food group.
Okay. So it's in the food group, right? But yeah, my mother-in-law's gravy and stuffing. You know, she does the whole bread, the whole from scratch type stuff. So that's a good one, you know.
That is a
does
way
she put
to
the bird. Does she put it actually in the bird?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Puts it in the bird.
Because remember, you know, if it's not in the bird, it's not stuffing. It's just dressing.
you know what? We were having that discussion with someone here where I live. We had a Friendsgiving this last Sunday, and we had turkey and stuff. And it was a topic of discussion because there was somebody from California, not me, that was saying, well, we call dressing the stuff you put on salad, you know, the dressing on top of salad. And here they call it dressing is something totally different that we would consider stuffing. So now you've cleared it. So if it's not in the bird, then it's dressing.
That's right.
Okay. Now, this
my grandmother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law makes a pan of chicken and dressing. So it's got like chicken and cream of mushroom soup under the bread, the like cornbread and biscuit crumbles that she uses. And I mean, I would commit murder in order to get a plate of that chicken and dressing. It's amazing.
But you should know,
so
this is an area of the country where they consider mac and cheese a vegetable. So you kind of have to weigh this out and balance this out. So it's they take their food very serious, but they're kind of very funny on how they would categorize it. So.
Yeah, but you know what? One thing I've learned in the South is I'm not going to get into an argument with anyone over their food. So I would agree with you.
that's right.
Because it was getting pretty tense yesterday, the conversation. And I had a conversation something like similar like about grits, because I actually tasted some grits and they told me the right way to cook them and what to do with them. And actually, the grits I tasted were pretty good. And they said, oh, that's nothing compared to someone properly making it. So I'm waiting. They're going to teach me how to make grits also. So I'm going to learn how to make dressing and grits here before the year's out.
There you go. Well, you can also head down to our friends at Charlie's and get their pimento cheese grits, 'cause those are just delightful.
Uh-huh.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
I got to hit that place.
They actually do a full Thanksgiving. Last year, that's what I did. We got our Thanksgiving from Charlie's. Inspired from the Red Wolves. That's how dedicated we were. So if you need to, if you have an emergency, you're not prepared, you got some people coming in, you may be someone who's who you saw at the combine, you got to impress them, I just give them a call at Charlie's. They'll take care of you.
I will. For sure. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Coach. We hope you have a wonderful holiday, get a chance to see your family, and we look forward to seeing you again once the preseason starts.
Absolutely, and happy Thanksgiving, and appreciate all the support you guys always give us, and we look forward to a great 2021.
All right, we're back. So, Adam, what's your favorite side dish?
So, Thanksgiving side dish number one for me has always been and will always be the green beans with the things on top. My mind is blank on what they're called. The little fried onions, on top of the green beans with like the mushrooms. Like cream of mushroom soup and all that stuff built into it. It's the least healthy way to have green beans, and I love it for a side dish. But ultimately, what I love about Thanksgiving is really having turkey for like 3 days afterwards for like every meal. Like, oh, what are you having for breakfast? I'm having a turkey omelet. What are you having for lunch? Turkey sandwich. Dinner, turkey with mashed potatoes. Stop judging me.
All right, Jeff, what's yours?
You know what? That's something that's it used to be. I used to love mashed potatoes, which I still like mashed potatoes. But Beth makes this squash casserole, which is also in the vein of taking a healthy vegetable and making it in the most unhealthy way possible. And so basically, you have these, you know, great nutrients and just turn it into a carbohydrate. And it's delicious, and it's a little bit of cheese to it, and it's really creamy, and it's good to go. But yeah, I do think one of my favorite things about Thanksgiving is a turkey sandwich the day after. And when I lived in Canada, we were so close to the border, we would celebrate Thanksgiving on a Monday a month earlier. But because we're so close to the border, they went ahead and celebrated it on because it would get American TV and all that stuff. So a lot of them would have Thanksgiving on American Thanksgiving. So two Thanksgivings, because you lived on the border, that's how I got to be who I am now.
Man, that's even better than your parents being divorced and having two Christmases. For me, mac and cheese is always a go-to. Of course, talking with Jimmy there, I told you about the chicken dressing that my my wife's grandmother, Nan, makes. And I am not lying when I said I would commit murder in order to get a plate of Nan's chicken and dressing. It is absolutely incredible. So
do you think Coach Jimmy has caused a little controversy on the stuffing as well as dressing, or is that something that's just open to interpretation?
I think it's pretty standard to understand that, you know, if it's stuffing, it's been stuffed inside a bird, and if it's dressing, it's made outside the bird.
Hmm. Do you have any passions that way, either way, Adam?
So, yeah, I think dressing is, it's made in a pan outside of the turkey. Stuffing is stuffed inside the turkey. That's how I view it. My problem is there are two different ways to make stuffing. Some that you pull the stuffing out, you add turkey drippings to it to make it wet, and then you put it back in, versus just completely dry. So there's two different ways people do it. So, yeah. I prefer a drier stuffing than a wet, but a wet dressing versus a dry dressing. So I know that's weird, but that's how I go.
Oh, you're a complex man.
I overthink food is what it really comes down to.
Makes sense to me, though. So had a big international window. And, of course, two really important games for U.S. men's national team. We had a scoreless draw against Wales. We had a 6-2 wild victory against Panama, played in Austria. A lot of young guys based in Europe. People have made a big deal about all these different American players that are taking part in Champions League with various clubs. What do you guys make of this recent window of this European talent?
Well, I finally got a chance to, one of the Wolves players had got a chance to get on the Wales match, Owen Odesawi. So I was watching for that, but my thought was, is it more impressive getting a draw against Wales, or is it more impressive to go ahead and get the 6-2 against Panama?
I'm trying to figure out why I care. That's where I'm at. So. Why do I care what a bunch of teenagers did in November during 2020 when really we should not be having international events?
Oh, I agree with that. Yes, I don't think we need to have international friendlies. I could understand these ones that matter because it's going to be other competitions, such as going for the Olympics and stuff. But like for just these international friendlies, I think it's a good time to not do that.
And I think, you know, I've expressed this before on the podcast, actually, I think it was the last international break that, you know, there are to a point there, I get it, like the European stuff that's happening, Nations League, you know, Scotland and all the Scottish fans are super excited because they qualified for Nations League and, you know, lost 1-0 today, unfortunately, to Israel. But like Kieran Tierney, who is an Arsenal player, right? He played 3 games during this international break, and he played 90 minutes in every one of them. That doesn't make sense to me. Like, it's not the World Cup. These guys should not be playing that many matches during a break, and then having to be set in their games that they're actually being paid for, or they're going to have a situation where they're going to be possibly have an injury situation. That the training is not the same during COVID. It's just not. You read every article. They don't have the same ability to train like they normally do. And the atmosphere and the setup of it is so different and they're having to, you know, crunch as many games as they can in. It just seems like a bad idea. Like, why are we taking these breaks and not instead spreading out the domestic competitions to give more rest because of the fact that they really, like English Premier League, and not just in England, but they literally had like a 3-4 week break before, from one season to the next. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So it's hard for me to get excited. Also, these teams that we're playing against in friendlies for the U.S., they're not their real national team, and that's not the real U.S. national team. Like, if this was a World Cup qualifying, how many of those players would have actually played, right? And that's why I have a hard time getting excited about it.
So I am worried about the phrase thick and fast getting overuse injuries just as much as you're worried about Kieran Tierney. Because the commentators seem to love talking about how all the matches are coming thick and fast. And I think your points are valid. I honestly, if I feel like there's quite a few of those guys that are going to be the ones. Listen, if I turn on another World Cup qualifier and have to watch Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore, at least for the half that Jozy Altidore isn't injured, I don't know what I'm going to do. These guys need to be the ones that are going to be playing in the World Cup. And so the friendlies to me are important in that they've got to get a chance to look at whether or not these guys are going to be able to play, can handle it. And so I think there was value for the U.S. national team in playing these games. I don't know that either. I think there's some cautious optimism in the way that both of those games went. The six goals were wonderful against Panama, but you know, even despite the fact that Panama qualified for the last World Cup and we didn't, I think 9 times out of 10 you're expecting us to beat Panama. I don't think Wales is the kind of team that you're going to walk away impressed with a draw, even though they controlled most of that game. There were some glaring issues with the fact that they couldn't break them down and score a goal. Didn't even really come up with very many attacking chances. So I think there's room for cautious optimism. I'm glad that these games got to be played so that we have an idea of what the future looks like as we move forward and we're not stuck in clinging to guys who couldn't get us there in the past. And it's just been so long since the U.S. national team has had a chance to even get on the field. It was good to watch those games and see what can happen. In other news, FIFA Nations, UEFA Nations League, we've got the semifinals set with Italy, Belgium, France, and Spain. Unfortunately, our good friends in Liechtenstein needed a win against Gibraltar and unfortunately came away with a draw. So they are not going to be able to get promoted out of League D. Sorry, Ulrich. And then you talked about that was actually UEFA, the Euro qualifier that Scotland won. So Scotland's first major competition getting to play in Euro 20, it'll be 2021 now, even though it was supposed to be this summer. Scotland's going to get to play in that. So congrats to the Scottish.
And
we'll keep our fingers crossed that Greg Hurst gets selected.
Yeah, I don't see that happening, but how big is that England-Scotland game going to be on June 18th? I'm just like, that will be a huge game in Scotland, right? Like, yeah, they're in that group stage. You've got the Czech Republic, Croatia, and England. You know, that game on the 18th for the Scottish fans is going to be huge. So,
yeah, very cool. All right.
Actually, right now, guys, are you sure England's going to be there? Because they've got to get out of Group A, and Belgium is already in. But you know they are tied with Denmark. But I guess they are ahead on goal differential. So have they finished their?
That's done. So they're in. So Group D is Croatia, Czech Republic, so England, they are in. And Scotland. Okay. Yep.
Yeah, Jeff, okay, you're looking at you're looking at Nations League, not the Euro 2021.
Okay, sorry.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
Too many leagues, confusing, man. Yep.
All right. Well, also coming up, we of course have English Premier League coming back, and looking ahead a couple weekends, there's a real big soccer chat derby coming with Wolves taking on Arsenal. But what are you guys looking forward to seeing here in the next couple weekends?
I just want to see life That's what I want to see. I want to see my team come back to life, because it's been excruciating to watch us for the last few games, just being honest. Like, even the games that we've won have been excruciating. So I would like to see that Leeds game on Sunday. Let's show some life. It's really fun to be finally playing Leeds again. They're a historical rival for us. It's fun to have that back, and then, you know, then go beat Wolves 4-0. So I'm looking forward to it.
You're funny. I'm looking forward to this match. It is going to be quite telling. Wolves take on Southampton, which you would normally, any other year, you would think, okay, that's pretty easy. But Southampton is looking really solid this year. They are going to be playing without Ings, but it really depends on how they come out after this international break. You guys talk about some of these players playing three times every minute. Well, Raul Jimenez is one of those players, because he just won't leave the field. He just wants to score every goal, and he wants to be involved in everything. But I'm not sure what shape he's going to be in. So it's, you just never know coming back after the international break. But yeah, and then after Thanksgiving, we will have the Arsenal Wolves, and that should be quite interesting, and it could be a little tense. One of my friends from, I was back on the chat with a whole lot of Wolves, and Josh from Whole Lot of Wolves, the guy who's not English, looks like he might be in the area. So Adam, if I could bring him up to Chattanooga, where would I take him to watch Wolves Arsenal? Is there a pub you would recommend?
So typically, yeah. So typically, the if you're talking about like a Chattanooga Gooner pub, they are, you know, in past mm-hmm. years there has been, but they're not actually getting together during COVID. So unfortunately, my understanding is that that's not currently happening. So sadly, I don't have a spot for you to go, but it's Parkway Poorhouse has had games for us before, where that's where they've gone in the past. There's a couple other places they've gone as well. But it's not, like I said, it's not happening right now.
So has that changed your connection with the Arsenal this year by not being able to be with your other
good roommates? A lot of our games, because Europa League, are on Sundays, right? And so it's already different because of that. I don't have a great opportunity there, but no, it's fun when you are able to get together. When I've gone to Charlotte, they play at London's Calling. They play the games at Charlotte and London's Calling, and that's a lot of fun, especially if it's an early morning game. But yeah.
Okay, cool. So when the pandemic is over, so next year, hopefully we'll be able, or maybe later on in the year, hopefully we could catch one live and record one of us having tears.
And I personally am excited this Saturday to watch Chelsea take on Newcastle, and then they'll be taking on Tottenham, riding high, coming off the international break. Timo Werner, Kovacic, and N'Golo Kante all scoring goals during the international break. So keeping that run of form should be fun to see.
That will be a good match. Another good one for this coming Saturday, and normally I wouldn't have thought of it last year, but Brighton Villa could be quite interesting. And of course, you have Man City Tottenham. That will also bring some, that has the potential to have some fun. Looking at the next week, there's another one. I think it's Liverpool Leicester City. That's going to be on Sunday. So that's also, I think that's right after the Arsenal match. So that should get, that will hopefully will be a good match as well this weekend.
I agree. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the program. our final final thing, and it's going to be a quick one, obviously, but it's time for the Biggles Wade Report. So, not much happening in Biggles Wade, unfortunately. Games at their level have been called off for the national lockdown. Won't resume until December 5th. Right before they went on the break, Biggles Wade United unfortunately lost to Colney Heath, the team that was able to leapfrog them into first place. So right now they're sitting, I want to say, in third in their standings. And things are looking good for Biggles Wade United at that top. And so hopefully we can see something and have them fighting for a promotion spot. It'll be exciting to see how that goes once play resumes. Looking around the other clubs that I've adopted, hoping to get some clout and possibly get a free jersey mailed to me. Leighton Orient, unfortunately, on a bit of a losing streak. They find themselves at 14th right now in the League 2 table. But our friends in Canada, Forge FC, most recently in the CONCACAF League round of 16, yet again on the road, score a goal late in order to take the lead and win 2-1. And so they will be yet again on the road in Haiti, playing a team called Arcahi. And those games, CONCACAF League, are available on Fox Sports 2. So if you get FS2 through your cable streaming package, whatever it is, you can watch these matches. A lot of fun. A bit of a Chattanooga connection, I guess. A former CFC NPSL player, Jordan Dunstan, plays with Ford FC. So there you go. That's your Biggles Wade report. Well, we want to go around the table and say what we're thankful for. Not really. That's one of the sentimental, sappy things that I don't like about Thanksgiving. But we do want to say that we are thankful for you, our loyal listeners. We appreciate each and every one of you, all seven. And we're probably going to be taking a break next week during Thanksgiving. And so we hope you guys have a wonderful holiday and get a chance to relax and enjoy your turkey and hopefully see small amounts of family. And we'll talk to you in December.
Bye.
Christmas is a wonderful holiday, but, you know, I think Halloween is fantastic. And this year there were stuff up before Halloween, and that's just sacrilege. So
the humor in former pastor calling Halloween being skipped as sacrilege is not lost on me.
No, I mean, it's a fun holiday, but I'm agreeing with, there's a difference spiritually what Christmas is and Thanksgiving is and what the actual celebrations we do as a community and about the consumerism. So yeah. Anyway,
so I'm probably gonna cut a bunch of that when I actually do the editing. You know how much you know how much fun it would be at this point to just not be on the show the rest of the time and only have my going off on Thanksgiving and Christmas. <It's a show.
laughs> Yeah, we don't hear from Adam for months, and the next thing in our airing of grievances,
we got it started, and Adam just stormed off. We had to do the rest of the program without him. We just heard a door slam, and that was the end of
triggered.
It.
He was triggered.
La 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 la.